family, or so Walton family, 17%. We're seeing an increased use of house brands and exclusive suppliers. So if we talk about branded products, it may be a national brand that's out there, like it may be a Packers brand, like a Tyson, or it may be a house brand. It may be Sam's Choice or President's Choice product. But we're seeing more and more branding. With branding comes liability issues. It's one other thing that changed from commodity to product. Commodity, you go in, you get a piece of meat, you take it home, and it's tough. You go back to the store, it's beef is beef, right? You get it home, and it's tough, and it says, President's Choice, Consumer Satisfaction Hotline, call this 800 number if you have a problem. Suddenly, they have a problem if the product has a problem. They put the reputation on the line with every piece of meat. You can think about that as being an unsatisfactory product, like something a little tough. Think about it, an extreme case, somebody gets sick or injured eating the product, that's the 800 number the lawyer calls, right? And they know exactly where, because they've got their name and reputation riding on it. And as part of a risk management strategy, if I'm putting my reputation on that product, I'm checking it out down the line. And it may be something that the individual company does. It may be something they outsource. We're beginning to hear of Packers on the feed band signature. At least one company has kind of outsourced that to a third party. Sent letters out to producers that says, you know, we still require signatures and so on, but this company will be contacting you about your signatures and your process. They want a little more meat behind it, if you will. And so liability, growing retail sector with growing liability is going to be pressure back down the line. What are the changes? Let's think about the European influence. Two of the top 11 grocers are European. Four of the top 10 grocers in the world are European. And the Europeans have a chain captain model. You've all heard about this. But they visualize these food chains, and the retailer sees themselves as the protector of the consumer. They position themselves as the protector of the consumer. Currently, U.S. consumers still put a lot of trust in USDA for safety and wholesomeness, and that's great. We've worked hard to establish that. Other consumers, certainly around the world, are not as trusting of their government, and so they turn to trust the retailer over a government. We may see some of that here in the U.S. So what happens in this chain captain model is it gets very costly. First off, safety becomes a competitive issue. We were in England, and this is several years ago now, 1999, but you could go into the retail grocery store, walk into the meat counter, and I could buy three different ribeyes. Scottish quality assured, Irish quality assured, and then British beef and lamb quality assured. And they were arguing about whose quality assurance program was safer to the consumer at the meat counter. Do we really want an industry where you go into the grocery store and they advertise our food is safer than our competitor's food? So that's a very, very costly system. And it just immediately puts doubt in people's minds. In those cases, if you were part of that supply chain, you had to be audited because they were making that statement. They were taking on that liability. So now you had to be audited to be able to sell. And if you were in this supply chain and audited by their system, you couldn't sell to the competitor unless you were audited by them. So suddenly you had to be approved to sell here and approved to sell here and approved to sell here. We were on one farm that would have three, four, five auditors a year come through. Two or three on beef, two or three on hogs, another one on grains. It gets to be a very, very costly system with multiple audits. And in Europe, I'm not saying that would happen here, but one of their big ones, of course, in England was feed use. They had a legitimate BSE concern in England because they had a mess on their hands. So part of that audit involved their feed use. What were you feeding? How were you sure you weren't getting the feed mixed up, and so on? They also incorporated animal welfare. They had a sign on the meat counter in the grocery store that we were in that says, all meat was raised by standards approved by the Royal Society of Prevention for Cruelty to Animals at no additional cost to you, on the meat counter in letters about this big. And how did they know that? They were auditing on the farm to make sure. Got a story, I got some pictures of this farm in a minute, but this farmer said, well, we were audited and we had two violations. One was, you know, last audit we had two violations. One was we didn't have the fire exits clearly marked in the barns. I asked if their cattle could read. The second one is they did not keep records of when they warmed their stock dogs. So they were in violation. Now, they got just a slap on the hands and be sure you keep records and such. But the point was, this fire exit was a worker safety issue in Europe. The animal rights had to do with care of stock dogs. They were bringing a lot of other things in there that probably weren't necessary for their product. They may have been good business practices for that farmer to make sure his dogs were well cared for, but wasn't necessary in this system. We have our own case with animal rights and animal welfare concerns that's growing. Certainly in the McDonald's with the plant verification, all of Temple Grandin's work. Food Marketing Institute, the NCCR guidelines on animal care guidelines. And I know NCBA is working on some of these animal care guidelines. And hopefully in a case where the industry can take the leadership on that rather than getting drugged behind as somebody else takes the leadership on it. SWAP, how many know what SWAP is? Anybody? Swine Welfare Assurance Program. The pork industry has stepped up and said, we're going to develop welfare standards, we're going to develop an auditing system that involves on the farm, with the idea that there may come a day when somebody like McDonald's or Wendy's or someone else says, we only buy from systems that have welfare guidelines all the way through the system, not just the plant, as they do now. And in order to sell to us, you've got to be certified on welfare. Again, another audit. They're also, we're all aware of the trucker quality assurance programs and the trucker certification. So those types of things are not that far down the road for us. This is that farm in England we talked about. This fable is Farm Assured British Beef and Lamb. This is after about two or three. Well, I think one was a retailer, one was a packer, developed their own audit system, and in order to sell into that food chain, they had to do the audit. The industry, and this was the equivalent of our National Livestock and Meat Board, what we used to have, this industry-led effort, stepped up and says, we'll do the farm assurance, we can do both pork and beef at the same time, and it will be universal if we... all packers will accept it. And that's what happened. The industry finally stepped up, and if you're assured by these people, at least the major packers will agree to that. So this was a sign posted on the barn, has the farm ID number at the bottom that says this farm is quality assured, a symbol of excellence for British beef and lamb. And that's this sign right up here. See if I can find it over here. That's that same sign posted. This is a hay barn with 14-foot sidewalls up to the roof. But notice this sign. Caution, fragile roof, use crawling boards. As a part of their assurance program for worker safety, they had to post warning signs on any potential hazard. So this barn with 14-foot high eaves had to have a sign on it that says, if you're going to walk across this roof, which has no openings in it to put hay down through or anything, be sure you go up there with long boards so you don't fall through. So, these systems can clearly go over the top. This is the same farm that didn't worm their stock dogs and didn't have fire exits for their cattle. The point being, one, industry can pick up and take leadership on this, and if they do, I don't think you'll see nonsense. If you let somebody else do it, humane. So keep that in mind. Export market demands, let's talk briefly about that. We're already aware of the age verification with Japan is coming. We talked some about this morning in the first session of documenting birthdays. The non-hormone treated plan from to export beef to Europe, there's a system that's been in place for three or four or five years, but again, it's a process-controlled system. And then traceability issues I want to touch on. We have both consumer countries. Japan has traceability. We don't sell to Europe, of course, but they have traceabilities. But then our competitor countries. Speaker earlier today said that we're the only major beef producer that doesn't have an ID system. I won't argue one way or the other, but Canada has, Australia has, New Zealand has. A lot of our major competitors do have or are putting one in place as we are putting them in place. The point is that's coming. The age verification, as we said, may have value to the packer. The announcement was made about 2 weeks ago about age verification on the A40 cattle, where you can look at the bone ossification. If they're in the A40 classification, they'll be accepted. Well, I would say, all right, then we don't need to mess with all this paperwork. They can go into the cooler and sort cattle that are young enough to go to Japan. However, as we talked to some of the packers, we were hearing things like, you know, we'd like to know before we kill the animal and send them to the cooler, which ones were possibly qualify, so we can coordinate our slaughter. And all of those that are eligible for Japan, we can kill in one shift or part of a shift. They see value in that. If we want to export any of the offal, we need to know before the animal dies whether to keep the offal separate and the variety meats. Because if I have to wait and view them in the cooler, the variety meats have gone off to rendering. And so I want to know ahead of time the birth dates so I can know to keep the offal separate because there's value in that. And then certainly with the requirement of the specified risk material removal, if something goes to Japan, you have to remove all the SRMs. I'd like to know ahead of time which ones those are. Otherwise, I got to remove it from all the cattle in case one of those carcasses qualify. So I think there's still going to be value to age verification, even though there's just those that we don't know the birth date of, we can go in and view and sort. And USDA Agricultural Marketing Service is the one that's developing that protocol for how you do plant verification, the BEV program. And they also have guidelines that we've talked to them on at the farm level, what kind of certification or verification is needed. Let's talk about one of our competitors as an example. This is Australia, and this is a small program. They, as we heard this morning, they have something like 12 million head in their ID program. They have a branded program over there called Meat Standards Australia that's a guaranteed tender program. And that's particularly important in Australia because only about 20 to 25% of their beef is grain-fed, the rest is grass-fed. So as you walk into a grocery store and wanted grain-fed beef, how do you know which it was? How long had it been grain-fed? And so they established a system using science that looked at things like the age of the animal, the grain, how long it had been grain-fed, and the percent Bos indicus. And then at the plant level, whether they use electrical shock treatment to tenderize it or what they call the tender hook, they'd hang the cattle from the H-bone rather than the hock that would stretch that back of that animal that would tenderize things, how much aging was involved at the retail level, they had to verify sale date, and if it was a restaurant, they had to have a certified chef. Chef goes to school to know how to cook it. So if they made a claim on the menu that this is a guaranteed tender and the chef screwed it up, they didn't want the rest of the system to get blamed for it. They had enforcement and trace back as needed. It was a guaranteed product. If a consumer brought back a product, they had the capability of tracing that back down the line to see who was in violation. Was it just one of those outliers, or was it a case where it didn't get aged as long as it was supposed to? So a fairly neat system, but one that they were getting ready to, they've already taken to Japan to guarantee a product, and they've got a process that the Japanese can go back and audit. How does this work? Does it make sense? And ways to make inroads into new markets. Let's talk domestically about consumers and willingness to pay for certain products. Jason Lusk, when he was at Kansas State University, did his research on consumers' willingness to pay for a guaranteed tender steak. What he found in a panel, and this was held an auction afterwards, consumers would sample the product, taste the two products, and then bid on them, and how much were they willing to spend of their money for one product or the other. And what he found was with two different products, if he didn't label them, just A and B, consumers 51% of the time would pay a premium for the tender product. However, if he did it and labeled the product as guaranteed tender versus not guaranteed tough, but just no label, what he found was now over 60% of them would pay a premium, and the premium was larger. The key was information was passed through the system. Let's take a look down at Nebraska. Dylan Faze and Wendy Umberger looked at grass-fed versus grain-fed beef. This is grass-fed beef out of Argentina. These are both select, so the grading was the same. It wasn't choice versus grass-fed, so keep that in mind. But there were two steaks, one grass-fed, one grain-fed. On average, consumers would pay in this test $1.61 more for grain-fed beef. So again, if you only got one product, beef is beef, we're right. Everything should be grain-fed, and on average, we're correct. But their study found was nearly a fourth of the consumers would pay a premium for the grass-fed of $1.36. So now, suddenly, if we can differentiate that product, there's somebody else out there that we can get more money out of their pocket. And so it becomes a game of how do we get the most money out of the most people's pockets rather than just saying, here's the average, take it or leave it. Another example, again, Wendy and one of her grad students look at certified U.S. There's a premium paid on certified U.S. beef over no label whatsoever. That was one of the early studies before cool rules were finalized. They had two steaks. They split them in half, so there were two identical pieces. One said guaranteed U.S., product to the U.S., the other was completely blank. And sure enough, consumers paid more for the one that said U.S. They went back and did another one and compared U.S. versus Australian and versus Canada. In this study, on average, they paid more for U.S. So U.S., this is the U.S. premium over Australian. If they preferred the U.S., they paid the $2.23 more for the U.S. If they preferred the Australian, they paid $1.38 more for the Australian. There's only 19% preferred grass-fed Australian, almost 65% preferred U.S., and on average, the premium was $1.20 in favor of U.S. Okay? There were 16% that didn't care. Didn't make any difference to them. If we compare it to the Canadians down here, there was 29% preferred the Canadian product. They'd pay $1.37 premium. There was 44% that preferred the U.S. They'd pay $1.63. On average, the premium was about 38 cents in this test, and 27% didn't care. I think the point here is twofold. One, if you can differentiate that product, again, you can meet more demands, you can extract more of those dollars. Secondly, it looks like if it is labeled, producers or consumers will choose one over the other. The question is that premium enough to pay the additional cost through the system? And we don't really have a good answer on that one. So we talked about consumer choices. You've got the commodity. You got one average product, one average price, the product, individual product, and individual prices. Now, let's talk about if we make a claim, like grass-fed, or natural, or guaranteed tender, and we make some claim, how do you back that up? This gets to that prove-it part, right? USDA wants some definition of terms. They had an open session on this, or a listening session, comment period, about a year ago. There's always been this debate about what defines natural, and at least to my knowledge, there's still not a definition of natural that's out there. They had talked about things, and they gave the example of the Nebraska corn-fed beef program. Great program, State of Nebraska, but the USDA said, does that mean that it was fed Nebraska corn? Or was it Nebraska beef, fed corn? What do you mean by this? And so they're looking into how do you more closely define it so that it meets compliance with the stated claim. It also gets at the issue of reputation and liability. Question is what is the cost of enforcement on top of the cost of producing these special claims? So you're trying to differentiate a product, you make a claim, you produce it differently. Who's going to pay the cost of enforcing that? The other thing is, as you're sitting there, how do you view this? As a victim or as an opportunist? Most of these things are under manager's control. Some changes may require a response, like genetics or nutrition, say on quality grades or health of the animals or so on. Some changes will require a management response rather than a production response. Information and communication. As you're seeing today, there may be more value placed on proof of age than there is the genetic potential of that calf. The information may be more valuable in some cases than the characteristics of the animal. One way of getting at that is through quality management systems. Again, going back and taking lessons from industry, manufacturing industry, retailing industry, and so on, are the quality management systems. And it's a producer-directed management system. It's not something that's prescriptive. It's something you develop for your business that does what you need to do. It's just that it needs to be capable of meeting the requirements. If you're going into a specification market, that system has to say, how do I address those specs? Document that the requirements are met, and then the information to evaluate production and marketing opportunities when they arise. And so that's really your business model that you're talking about. There's various models out there ranging from highly complex and costly to some that are not so costly or complex. They are a fairly flexible system because you develop your own rather than somebody else come out and tell you what to do. Third-party verification may be required to have value. And whether that third party is the USDA through a program they have, or whether it's an independent third party that's out there, that somebody to check up and give it a seal of approval. Examples, as we talked about, the ISO 9000, the USDA, or in the case of the environmental management systems, the ISO 14001. I want to talk briefly about the USDA program, and there may be some people here that's involved in that, or someone from the USDA can speak to it as well. But under the Agricultural Marketing Service, Livestock and Seed Program, Audit and Review and Compliance Branch, that's buried down there fairly deep. But the point is, it's under the marketing division, it's not under food safety, it's not under trade, it's a marketing issue of how we're going to prove our, so the branded product reaches more consumers, but somebody's putting their reputation at stake. The consumers are looking for more choices, and this is a way to achieve them, but there's going to be details that have to go behind it. Finally, just in the commodity world, we've got rising commodity standards. What is the new minimum I have to be able to sell, and what's the cost to be able to be at the minimum? And I don't think any of us really want to operate at the lowest point on the chain. Rising demands on cattle, quality grades are beginning to outweigh feedlot performance at high choice select spreads and premiums. Health treatments and impact grading, as we saw, and value. Age and source verification are increasingly important, and so there's greater value from calves that have the sound health program and genetics to grade if you can prove it. So again, it goes back to the proof. How do we get that done, and how do we do it in a system that is user-friendly at home and that we gain value out of it at home, let alone what we may be able to get additional in the marketplace? What's the cost of not meeting the consumer demands? Let's take the flip side of the argument. Fail with the consumer. We'll just produce what we want. They got to eat something, and somebody will eat it. right? Commodity market's going to continue. The minimum will continue to get higher. There's going to be additional things we have to do just to be a member of it. There's going to be missed opportunities if you're not eligible in those higher value markets. And you may lose out to pork, poultry, or in some cases you lose out to beef producers who are willing to do what the consumer in those markets is wanting to do. The point is, there are alternatives for consumers. The cost of not meeting the consumer demand is that you lose out. Either it's on opportunities or markets in general. This is, I'm not sure who this case Zabriskie is, but I thought it was interesting that although your customers won't love you if you give them bad service or product, your competitors will. The definition on what defines the product is changing. We need to be able to change with it. So, with that, I'm going to quit. Be happy to take any questions. I realize that was kind of like drinking out of a fire hose. It came pretty fast. But any questions out there?